Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Kerry Cheshire. We'll be beginning this week's episode in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex talking to our Metroplex correspondent, Aaron Anderson, about what happened with Dallas County schools on the ballot. Then we'll head on out to West Texas and check in with Ranger College's proposed annexation, then have an interview with Elizabeth Graham of Texas Right to Life, and last but not least, hear from Michael Quinn Sullivan on how Texas's election season is shaping up. But, you know, first to start off in the Metroplex, Aaron Anderson, what happened last night with Dallas County schools?
Well, Kerry, last night, Dallas County voters voted to shut down the bus bureaucracy known as Dallas County Schools by a pretty good margin of 58% to 42%.
Now, Aaron, you say bus bureaucracy. I think it's important for our listeners to remember Dallas County Schools does not educate a single child. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's a taxpayer-subsidized school bus agency, not a school. And it's not a very good bus agency either.
So talk a little bit about the process that kind of led to this decision. I know here in the Texas legislature, State Senator Don Huffines, who represents a big portion of Dallas County, carried the legislation that granted voters the authority to do this. But talk about the grassroots effort that led to, you know, this 56-44 final vote.
That's correct, Kerry. Dallas County Schools has had a lot of problems, from poor on-time performance to a terrible safety record, drivers running red lights, and some huge financial problems as well, putting them over $100 million in debt. Some great investigative reporting exposing these problems, and a unified group, including Senator Huffines and some members of the Dallas Independent School District Board, organized to help get this agency shut down once and for all.
Well, you mentioned the investigative reporting, Aaron. I really want to give you a shout out for covering a lot and uncovering a lot more with Dallas County Schools on our website, texasscorecard.com. Talk a little bit about what is next, both for Dallas County Schools, and what is next for this grassroots army in Dallas County that has won this victory today.
Well, for Dallas County Schools, starting next week, a dissolution committee will be formed from the superintendents of the 9 school districts that use DCS bus service, Dallas ISD being the largest of those, as well as some other state-appointed financial advisors. And they will wind down the agency over the course of this school year. At that time, the buses and service centers will be divided among the districts, and they'll decide either to run their own bus service or to contract with another busing company. Now, keep in mind, DCS is still over $100 million in debt, and so the 1 cent tax on all Dallas County property owners will continue to be collected until that debt is paid off.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Aaron, and that'll be a really interesting scenario to watch moving forward. And now we'll head on out to West Texas and check in on Zach Maxwell and get the story on how grassroots citizens overwhelmingly defeated Ranger College's proposed annexation. Zach, what happened here?
Yeah, overwhelmingly is an understatement. This was a grassroots victory that quite possibly has never been seen before. I mean, it was truly unbelievable what these citizens have done. It shows what we the people can do if they stand up and do what's right. So Ranger College, located in Ranger, Texas in Eastland County, has been trying to annex three of the adjacent counties, Brown County, Comanche County, and Erath County. And the vote turnout, listen to this, you're not even going to believe it. It is absolutely true. Over 15,000 people voted in this election. Almost 500, little less than 500 actually, voted for it. That means that over 15,000 people voted against this referendum. That's like 97%.
Absolutely. You know, the numbers kind of vary a little bit between the counties, but it's 97%, 96%, 96% against this proposed tax increase. And Zach, I think it's important for people to realize this is something that, you know, they passed a bill through the Texas legislature so that they could take this measure to the ballot. There were a lot of the go government crowd and local government lobby who were all coming out in favor of this. And to any observer, you would have thought that this had a chance of passing, but the citizens rose up and said resoundingly, not just no, but hell no to this proposed annexation.
Yes, they do not want this. They do not want right now. I mean, we've got a movement for property tax reform. Everybody is paying exorbitant amounts of, you know, property taxes, and they said no, we do not want our property taxes raised yet again.
Well, and Zach, talk a little bit about how these grassroots citizens did defeat this proposal, because it wasn't rocket science. It wasn't rocket surgery. It was there's like a Facebook group and calling their neighbors and friends.
That's right. I mean, it all started with a few individuals getting together and starting a Facebook group. You can actually go to that. You can Google Ranger College against, or it's Citizens Against Ranger College Tax Annexation or something like that. And it just goes in there, and these people just got their friends out, told them, hey, you need to pay attention to this. You've got to get out and vote. You've got to make sure your voice is heard. And by golly, they made their voices heard.
Absolutely. And, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't kind of mention the kind of assistance that they got from some of the local leaders there. I know State Representative Mike Lang coming and was going out warning people that the dangers of this proposed tax increase. And there in Neerath County, potential state representative Chris Evans was leading the fight against the annexation proposal.
That's right. In Erath County, actually, that he hopes to represent soon, has actually gone out and put out radio ads across the district. You know, J.D. Sheffield, who currently represents that area, you know, would not speak out against this. And, you know, Chris Evans has told me on the side that, you know, he plans to go down there and fight the same type of policies in Austin.
Right, Zach. Well, I think voters all across the state should be encouraged by what happened with the Ranger College proposed annexation. It shows just exactly what grassroots citizens can do if they're willing to put in a little elbow grease and do a little hard work and come out against this proposal. So thanks so much for coming with us. Now we'll hear from Tony McDonald as he interviews Elizabeth Graham of Texas Right to Life.
Well, it's a pleasure to have our friend Elizabeth Graham with Texas Right to Life on the line with us here with Texas Scorecard Radio. Elizabeth, how are you?
I'm well, Tony. Thanks for having me. And I'm honored that Empower Texans would include me.
Yeah, well, it's good to have you on the show. You know, first of all, get started. Let's get the website out there so people know your organization. And then we can talk a little bit about the work y'all do.
TexasRightToLife.com. And Twitter is @TXRightToLife, all spelled out.
Well, you know, thanks for coming on the show. We wanted to talk a little bit about the issue of end of life. I know as a, you know, I'm a pro-life Texan conservative. I know a lot of other conservatives. And I think whenever we think of the pro-life issue, it's mostly defined as anti-abortion. And I think that's actually relatively easy for folks to understand. But your organization is involved in end of life as well. And we wanted to talk a little bit about kind of what is going on with Texas on the end-of-life issue and what a pro-life Texan who knows that they're anti-abortion ought to know about the end-of-life issue here in the Lone Star State as well. So can you tell us a little bit about the work that your organization does on end-of-life? And let's talk a little bit about where Texas is on this issue of end-of-life.
Well, I would ask for a clarification because not everyone who is victimized by the Texas law is at the end of their life. So we prefer to call these patients' rights issues or medical ethics issues only because Texas has the worst law in the nation regarding patients' rights and advance directive. It's basically euthanasia with a 10-day notice. The Texas advance directive law in our health and safety code allows doctors and hospitals to override your wishes if you're asking for medical treatment. And so if the doctors or hospitals think that your quality of life or you're too sick to merit further treatment, or if they just don't want to care for you anymore, they can hold a meeting. And at the meeting, they talk about you. And after the meeting, they will give your family a notice of their decision. And generally, the decision is that within 10 days, they are going to withdraw treatment. And that usually does speed or cause the death of the patient. Many of these patients are actually not at the end of their lives, Tony, so that's why we prefer to call this medical ethics or advanced directive issues.
Yeah, okay. So are the parent, the family even in the room when these decisions are made? Is this something that's just being made for patients?
Well, excellent question. Families are invited or encouraged to attend, but regardless of the family participation or actually not participation, regardless of the family's presence at the meeting goes ahead. The statutory process is as follows. If a doctor or hospital wants to make the move to withdraw treatment, they have to give the family notice of a 48 hours notice of this meeting. And when the 48 hours notice of the meeting is given, there is paperwork that accompanies the notice saying that we're going to have this meeting. Here's a copy of the statute that allows us to have this meeting. We're having this meeting because you've requested treatment. We think the patient's futile. You're encouraged or invited to attend the meeting. And here's a list of organizations that will help you figure out what we're talking about.
So,
and Texas Right to Life is on that registry that's given to families. And so sometimes families call us for help before the meeting, after the meeting. Sometimes they want us to go to the meeting with them. So that's the 48-hour notice provision.
So to make to make this clear, so these are hospital panels that are making decisions against the will of the family. The family's wanting one outcome, and the hospital's making a different decision.
Or even the patient. We have helped patients who are conscious and who have said, I want continued medical treatment. So these are even patients who can speak for themselves. So we're not looking at a person who is in a quiescent state or a semi-conscious or minimally conscious state. That some of those patients are, yes, but this has even happened to patients who are fully conscious. And when the patient himself or the surrogate or the authorized family member is asking for treatment, and the doctor and the hospital have decided they don't want to continue treatment, then they start this ethics committee process. And at the meeting, the facility or the ethics committee, or it's been called a death panel, now we hear it's called a critical and palliative care service team, which is kind of frightening.
That's very Orwellian, kind of complicated.
Yes, they come in a number of names. Memorial Hermann in Houston uses this critical, it's either critical and palliative care, critical and palliative services team or something like that. Nevertheless, the ethics committees come in all different names, and they have the meeting with or without the family. And at the end of the meeting, they give the family or the patient the written decision of what the committee deliberated about and what they decided on. And usually that means within 10 days, the hospital is going to withdraw treatment, and that leads to the death of the patient.
Wow. So are there some real-world examples that you could give to listeners of situations that have gone on, that you know, particularly that Right to Life has been involved in, where this has, you know, been a moral outrage?
Well, we've actually helped in the range of over 300 patients since 2003. The law passed in 1999. And in 2003, the law was updated to include this registry that is given to patients and families when the statutory process is started. And so since 2003, we've taken about two to four calls a month of families who are calling for help. And Tony, what's frightening is we wonder how many people haven't called us for help because they just are not clear on what the process is. But yes, I can tell you a number. There was a 16-year-old girl, Sabrina, who went into the hospital with a staph infection that had traveled to her brain. So she had part of her skull temporarily removed to address the brain swelling. And this is a 16-year-old all-star athlete, gem of a girl, straight A student, and light of her parents' eyes. And after brain surgery, you know, of course her head was dressed, but she had an open skull. She was put on a floor that was unmonitored by a nurse. And the person who was in charge hadn't passed the board exams in 3 years. So here's this 16-year-old girl who goes into a hospital with a staph infection, had this horrible surgery, which is clearly a case of medical malpractice, and the hospital made a move to start the 10 days to cover up their mistakes.
Oh my God.
Because this poor child ended up permanently disabled. And physically disabled, confined to a wheelchair, had to eat through a feeding tube, was never able to go back to school. And we've seen other situations where the 10 days has been started to cover medical malpractice mistakes. But one of our earliest cases I remember was a former veteran and a fellow who was a bus driver in Dallas, a school bus driver. And his wife called and said, we have this letter, what do we do? And an attorney in Dallas volunteered to help them. They didn't want to sue, they just wanted to understand the process. And so the attorney in Dallas talked to the hospital, it was Baylor in Dallas, and said, what's going on? This guy is not dying. Yes, he's very sick. He knows he's sick. In fact, he drove himself to the emergency room because he's had heart problems all his life, and he didn't feel well, so he wanted to get to the hospital because he was afraid he had pneumonia. Well, they ignored his pneumonia, pneumonia, excuse me, and they just wrote him off as having heart problems. So his pneumonia got worse, and the hospital made the move to withdraw treatment. And they made the ethics committee, they gave the 10-day letter, and then the attorney called the hospital and said, you know, he's not dying, he's going to recover. Could you just revoke the 10 days? We're trying to transfer him. Well, we transferred, it was a nasty battle, but the hospital rescinded the 10-day letter. We helped move the patient to a rehab facility where he recovered, and he lived 4 more months. And on the day he was dying, he turned to his wife and he said, thank you for fighting for me. I'm feeling sick. I think it's my time to go. Wow. And she stood up, held his wife's hand while he was dying. And she stood up and said, sweet, sweet woman, said, no, let me go get the nurse. And she said, and he said, no, baby, this is the way I wanted to die. Thanks for fighting for me. I think it's my time.
And this is 4 months. 4 months after 4 months? They've placed this DNR?
Oh. Well, this we don't know. The DNR is separate than the 10-day law. And I'm actually glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I may have some confusion about that. You can clarify that for me.
Up until a month ago, Texas law was silent on do not resuscitate orders and how they're executed and what patients' rights are. And so many times what we heard is that the patients who are subjected to this ethics committee process and then the 10-day law, we've heard that the doctors have written DNR orders, do not resuscitate orders, for these patients, in addition to making the move to withdraw treatment. And so whenever Texas Right to Life has been involved, we always ask the families, or in some cases the hospitals, is there a do not resuscitate order for the patient? And whenever the answer is yes, we ask the family, did you authorize that? Did you know about this? Do you want a do not resuscitate order? And most of the time the answer is no. And so we found out that the doctors will write a DNR order without even telling the patient or the family. So we've had those DNR orders revoked. And that's kind of lumped into the Texas Advanced Directive Law, because doctors will write DNR orders in the process of the ethics committee just so they, you know, can make sure that the person isn't given treatment. But separated now, the do not resuscitate order was addressed in the special session of the legislature, and hospitalized patients now are protected from unwanted DNR orders. And so a doctor has to seek consent from the patient or the patient's authorized surrogate or family member before writing a do not resuscitate order on the patient.
Well, that seems like a no-brainer, but it was a big victory for Right to Life to kind of get that placed in the law.
The whole law needs to be overhauled, but there have been some incremental steps in the last couple of sessions that are very helpful and that put us on the path to full reform. So the do not resuscitate order bill was one of those steps, and that was a very significant win.
So on DNR, and this is something I wasn't familiar with until I got to know you all with Right to Life, this isn't just extraordinary measures to revive a patient. It can be basic things like CPR, that kind of thing, right?
Exactly. So there's a number of procedures, shall we say, on a do not resuscitate order. And so one of them can be cracked ribs, chest compressions that can crack the ribs. One of them can be an injection that restarts your heart. I'm not going to get the name right, so I won't even try to explain that. But another one is helping the person restart breathing. And I'm not getting all of the technical medical terms correct. So you can do a DNR, a modified DNR, or you can have no DNR. But that should be your choice as a patient. You know, you don't want to take a fragile old woman into the hospital and say, do chest compressions because you could crack a rib.
Right, right.
So if she's in the process of dying and her lungs are not processing or exchanging oxygen for carbon dioxide and her lungs are full of fluid, you know, she's probably going to have trouble breathing, but you don't necessarily want to go the full way to start her compressions and get her breathing. I'm sorry. You don't want to go the full DNR because you could crack her ribs and cause further harm to her. But, there are other ways to resuscitate that type of patient. Is she if she has cardiac arrest.
So y'all are up against opposition on the. This is not obviously you're having to fight in the legislature to get these kind of common sense laws passed. What's the opposition that you're up against?
Well, the medical lobby, of course, the Texas Medical Association, it opposes pretty much every pro-life bill. They actually were forced to agree to the Do Not Resuscitate Reform Bill in this last special session of the legislature. But up until then, they have opposed every pro-life bill that's ever been introduced, whether that's in regard to cloning, stem cell research, abortion, pro-life laws, and, of course, patients' rights. The Texas Medical Association is our main opposition.
Yeah, and this is an organization. Yeah, this is an organization that, you know, pretty much most doctors in Texas are a member of through the insurance or through different ways. So that's something I think a lot of doctors, you know, there's a lot of great pro-life doctors out there who have no idea what they're supporting.
Well, I'm convinced that if most of the doctors who are practicing medicine and who actually care for their patients, which I assume is most doctors, they do want to give really compassionate and attentive and detailed care to their patients. And if they knew what Texas Medical Association did for them in the Capitol, they probably would rescind their membership to TMA.
Wow. All right, Elizabeth, tell us a little bit about the services that Texas Right to Life provides to Texans who may be facing these kind of issues with a Texas hospital.
Well, if they call us for help, there's a wide range of ways we can help. Usually we want to find out what the situation of the current patient is, so we try to find out the diagnosis, the insurance status, the current medicine, what therapies, if the person is breathing with a ventilator or if the person needs dialysis. So once we gather patient information, we try to help the family learn which questions to ask of the doctors. And we also try to help the patient move to a more appropriate care setting or a different care setting if that's what the family is requesting. And so we help patients transfer to a different care setting. If the patient or the family is asking for legal help, we can set them up with lawyers who will help them on a pro bono basis. We have also helped people go to court for a temporary restraining order to stop the 10 days from taking effect. We have found people who will go and sit with the patient just to kind of be in the room and to ask questions and to look out for the patient's care. We have attended ethics committee meetings, or we call them futility review panels, with families and ask questions on behalf of the patient and the family. So really we can meet wherever the family is to assist wherever they are in the process so that they don't feel alone and frightened of the intimidating medical community.
Well, great. Well, thank you for being that resource there. I know if I were facing these issues, I would call Texas Right to Life. So I just appreciate y'all being a resource for Texans there. Thank you so much for being on the program, Elizabeth. We've got a ton of issues that we're going to have you back sometime to talk about some of the details of these things. I feel like we've just barely scratched the surface.
Well, you did barely scratch the surface, but I didn't want to be too technical and bore your listeners to tears. So I look forward to coming back soon.
All right. Well, thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Tony.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Thanks so much, Tony and Elizabeth. I know Texas Right to Life provides a great deal of really good resources for Texans, and encourage everybody to check them out at texasrighttolife.com. Next, we'll hear from Michael Quinn Sullivan on how Texans should be involved in this coming election season and how they should take a hard look at every candidate on the ballot.
If the 2018 election season is to have a theme, retirement might already be it. Howdy, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary. Texas political landscape is being reshaped with a series of retirements. Some of the political retirements, like those of U.S. Representatives Sam Johnson, Jeb Pensarling, and most recently Lamar Smith, come after years of honorable service. Hinserling has served in Congress since 2003, Johnson since 1991, and Smith since 1987. But there are less noble reasons for retiring, like wanting to avoid electoral embarrassment. Incumbent House Speaker Joe Strauss announced he wasn't seeking re-election to his Bexar County legislative seat after realizing there was no way the Republican caucus was going to let him continue serving as Speaker. Within minutes, one of his cronies, Corsicana's Byron Cook, announced his own retirement. Cook barely won re-election in 2016 in a race mired in electoral irregularities that are still under investigation. Now, suffice it to say that Cook was going to lose in 2018 anyway. But frankly, we're probably not yet quite finished seeing rats fleeing the sinking ship of Strauss. We'd already seen key supporters of Joe Strauss head for the political exits like Jody Lobenberg of Collin County, Larry Gonzalez of Williamson County, and Larry Phillips of Grayson County. Look, now, whatever the reason for a seat becoming vacant, citizens have a special opportunity to reset or reinforce the quality of representation. But with that opportunity comes extra work for the voters. Open seat races demand special attention and care, because by definition, no one in the race has a record in the office sought. In Republican primaries, every single candidate's stump speech will sound like the second coming of Ronald Reagan, even if they intend to caucus with the establishment cronies. Rather than hope they won't go bad, we must all carefully examine those who would take on the trust of public office, whether as an incumbent, challenger, or open seat candidate. Get their commitments on issues and procedures in writing or in public. Make them take affirmative stances, not make vague promises. And let me stress that point. Don't let candidates for office tell you that they will have to make a decision about an important issue once they get elected. By then, it's too late. If a candidate for public office cannot or will not specifically articulate how they will vote in office, then you shouldn't give them your vote in the election. The men and women running for office are asking to be given the public's trust. Trust, but verify, as Ronald Reagan himself liked to say. In the case of an open seat election, voters need to look beyond the perfect family portraits gracing the push cards and the poll-tested bullet points used on the stump. Check out their voting histories. It's a matter of public record in which elections and party primaries they've participated. And be sure to check out the donations they've made to other candidates in previous years. Demand to know how many doors they've knocked and how many more they'll visit before Election Day. And make them answer your questions to your satisfaction. All those things will tell you about the candidate and the kind of office holder they will be. In every case, candidates for public office must demonstrate they will serve not the crony cartel of establishmentarians and lobby rent seekers, but the virtues of liberty. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
More than ever, the people of Texas are making their voices heard, reclaiming their rightful spot as the true leaders in our republic. It's in that spirit that Empower Texans gathers each year with our friends and supporters from across the state, and I hope you will consider joining that party. Our Conservative Leaders Gala is a time for fun, fellowship, encouragement, and celebration, an opportunity to recognize just how far citizens have come. The 5th annual Conservative Leaders Gala will be held in Irving, Texas at the Irving Convention Center on December 2nd. Our goal is to give Texans a chance to refocus our energy and effort on who really matters, citizens. For more information, to purchase tickets, or to find out about sponsorship opportunities, visit empowertexans.com/events. If you believe citizens are the real leaders in Texas, this will be an event you won't want to miss. We hope you can join us on December 2nd. Again, that's empowertexans.com/events.
Thanks so much for joining us on Texas Scorecard Radio. As a reminder, to learn more about Texas Scorecard Radio, Empower Texans, or the Texas Scorecard, you can check us out on our website, empowertexans.com. Until then, keep listening.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.